You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I need the pad.
No. I told you. I'm all in on the demo. I told you that a month ago. Uh-huh. Not only that. The Joker should be the front runner for MVP.
Okay,
now.
Stop it.
Why?
Stop it.
Why?
Stop
it. Front runner.
You're listening to The Dig.
What's up, Nuggets fans? Welcome to The Dig. This is Nick. I'm here with Jeremy.
What's up?
We've had a pretty good stretch of games here to look back on, Jeremy.
Yeah, it's been... It's been almost unreal. I feel like it's one of those situations where in seasons past, you look at the schedule and you say, what if? Actually, we had an article on the Stiffs that was a what if article, and it was awesome just going through all the what ifs. And it's something you always think your team could do if everything lined up right, and it never works out.
No.
But here we are on a winning streak with half of our team in the hospital, and... It is a what if scenario that turned out, so it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I tweeted this earlier this week. I think this is the most fun I've had watching Nuggets basketball since 09,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And I this might even be more fun, to be honest, because what they're doing right now with the amount of injuries they've had and things pretty well stacked against them all year so far, even just going into the beginning of the year without a starter and now being down three starters. They're all young, and they're all getting better, and they're hurt. They're not even at full strength. I mean, there's nothing to criticize here what they're doing right now, and that's an odd position to be in as a Nuggets fan.
But one thing that we've seen from all of this is that as much hardship has struck this team, as much criticism has been heaped onto this team, as much as these have been dark days, you would think from any outsider's perspective, if you were a fan of this team and you heard that this was going to be what happened to them going into it, where Barton was going to be out the second game of the season, where we were going to be down three starters, where our defense was going to rise up, maybe Millsap gets the credit for that, and then Millsap was going to be taken away for a long time, it would be hard to see that as a positive thing. But really, we've seen a strong silver lining here.
The theme.
The theme here, this episode, is the gold lining, and exactly what have we uncovered here, and how much of it bodes well for our future and for our present. That's a series of games that we were already prepared to lose as fans. We already had our excuses all written up for us being so injured.
And they were legit excuses.
Three
of their starters are hurt. They shouldn't have won those games.
Right. Yeah. It's something else that makes you win those. It's not purely out of talent because you're down to your second string players, your guys who even this summer were being questionable whether they could even be traded, where they even had value enough to be traded. And these are the guys winning the games, or at least pieces of it. So it's more than purely talent that win those games. There's a bigger picture to the Nuggets' success here.
Yeah, and I think that's really the silver lining here. And the reason we chose this as the theme for this podcast is because, A, the stars have had to step up. Jokic and Murray have proven that they are an elite core through this stretch and that they have the tools and the skills and the moxie that it takes to be a championship contender. But we've also seen a silver lining in that these bench players are getting the opportunity to show what they have, what their value is, what their skills are. A, because that's helpful to the Nuggets to know what we have, but it's also helpful as trade bait, potentially in the future too. And so moving forward, there's a lot of good that's coming out of this stretch of injuries, actually. We know that Gary Harris is solid. We all love Gary Harris's game. We know he's a great NBA pro. We know what Millsap brings to the table defensively, as a silent leader, as a veteran, as a stabilizing force on this team. We pretty well know what Barton brings to this team.
We think we know. We think we know what Barton brings based on like 115 minutes of him in that lineup. Right.
Well, we don't know what he brings as a starter necessarily yet, but we have a pretty good idea of the type of player Barton is. And so this allowed players like Beasley and Torrey Craig and Lyles and Monte Morris to prove what they really have and what they can add to this team moving forward. And I think that's an invaluable part of this stretch. And the fact that they're learning all of these things about these players, and these players are improving before our eyes, and they're also winning, is totally unexpected and something that is setting this team up for serious success, maybe even this year.
Winners and losers.
Okay, so let's take a look at some of the winners and losers over the last 2 week stretch, starting with the winners. Jeremy, who's been a winner over the last 6 games?
I think the clearest one has been Nikola Jokic. As much as he's been the cornerstone of our team for years now, what he's been able to do is the national media and even the local media, to a certain degree, have thrown we've all attached these balls and chains to him. And they're things like, can he play defense? Or we should say, there's different ways you play defense. We should say, can he impact on defense? Is he a leader? Is he just a facilitator, or can he, I already said, is he a leader? That was more about his attitude, but what about his productivity? Can he take on more of a role and be the head honcho to really get things in gear when it comes down to it? You know, all these things have been questions that that we ask either softly or loudly, like we've seen some people do. And he's been able to answer all of those one after the other, just knocked all of them down. Yes, I can be even a plus, a positive on defense. Yes, I can take this team and put it on my back and climb up the mountain. Yes, in the fourth quarter, I can show up. I can be decisive, and I can put the ball in the basket, or I can get it to somebody else in a position where they can do it. In this case, it's been Murray. But so for him to be in a situation that we didn't want him to be in, but to take it and to smash apart all these negative narratives about him, has been awesome to see.
Yeah. A shout out to Andy Bailey on Twitter. I'm stealing this directly from him. I saw this today. Here are Jokic's numbers per 75 team possessions this season. He's averaging about 22 points a game, 12 rebounds, 9 assists, close to 2 steals, and 1 block. That is good for 57% true shooting percentage and an almost 10 plus minus box. Andy compared this to Michael Jordan in his MVP season per 75 team possessions. Jordan scored at a higher clip, obviously, 30 points a game. 6 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.8 steals. And he has a 533 true shooting percentage and a 4.6 box plus minus, half of Jokic's. So when you compare them straight up head to head per 75 possessions, Jokic is the clear winner against Jordan in an MVP season. Now, I mean, Jordan's one of the greatest players of all time, so we don't want to go too far with this comparison. And this is one of the, you know, problems with just looking at statistics. But the fact is that Jokic is having a dominant season. He's had a few moments here and there when he's been off, where he's gone through some funky stretches. He's a young player. He's still figuring some things out. But when he's on, like he was against the Thunder, 24, 15, and 9 with three steals as your starting center. Or some of these other games through this stretch. He's been incredible. And there's no other way around it. He's straight up in the MVP conversation at this point. I've been seeing that all over the place today and yesterday, actually, that he has moved himself into the conversation. Not to say he's going to win an MVP this year, and there's still a lot of season left to go. But these numbers, these 25, 10, and 8, 25, you know, 32, 16, and 4 games that he's putting up, these are monster numbers. And it's the way that he goes about getting them, too. He's so efficient in his scoring, and he's always looking to distribute. You know, if there's a game where he only has 4 assists, it's only because people have missed shots. It's not because he wasn't finding open shooters.
Yeah, you know, it's impossible to compare Jokic to Jordan. You know, different time in the NBA, different positions. There's a million reasons why, but while statistics is usually used to be concise and specific about a comparison, to me, what that comparison actually did was tell a story about the abstract, about just how important this player is to their team and their team's success. A much more abstract picture there, where, again, going back to the criticisms that people have had about Jokic, those are pretty big criticisms. To say somebody is bad at defense and never can be good, that's half the game. So that is half of how important a player can be to their team. Questioning them in the fourth quarter is a really big deal. Maybe a little less important, but still a big deal. But the fact that these stats were able to tell at least that this is a huge overall impact, that answers so many more of those questions. And so while we shoot down all these criticisms of Jokic, there will always be criticisms. Right now, I'm hearing naysayers still say, yeah, but, you know, he might not be good in the playoffs. Well, it's like, well, he hasn't been there. How are we supposed to know? Like,
and he's somebody young.
Somebody like Harden, I think that is a fair criticism. He's been there so many times, and he has come up short. Or Russell Westbrook.
Right.
You know, you can start to bring those into play, but you start to get down where, okay, serious criticisms, okay, mediocre criticisms, okay, now we're getting to these small criticisms, and that's where we want to be at, because we've seen it and we've felt it with Jokic. It's awesome to be at this point where, okay, hard to compare him to Jordan, but you can look and you can see what a big impact he's bringing. And we're kind of just uncovering to the entire world what has actually been going on here. And that's Jokic earning it.
Yeah, honestly, I really think at this point, when people are down on Jokic, or they think that this is somehow a fluke, or he's just like a product of analytics or something like that, I really think it's just people not having any idea what they're talking about. Like, they just look at him and they go, well, he can't be good. You know, he's a
right.
What I saw him described as a bag of milk, right? Like, he's
yeah.
A doughy, big, goofy, you know,
and he is.
Dude. And he is, right. But what we're learning is that athleticism, freaky athleticism like LeBron James has, and Russell Westbrook has, and others in the NBA, Giannis, that's not the only way to be a good NBA player. It definitely can help, for sure. And it has helped a lot of players be great players. But there's other ways of being effective in basketball. It's one of the beauties of the game. And Jokic is demonstrating that. And I think for people that aren't watching him closely, they don't appreciate the way that he can dominate a game without being an athletic freak. And that's what's so interesting about him and unique. And that's why it's also hard to project what he might do in the playoffs or something like that. Like, we don't, you know, as the games really tighten and inevitably things in the playoffs become more one-on-one oriented, typically, we don't know how Jokic will respond to that, if Jokic ball is going to be effective or possible. But I mean, what we're seeing right now leads me to believe that the Nuggets could be doing something new that
right.
could be a big problem for a lot of people.
Right. So give us another winner.
Another winner has been Jamal Murray. I think we've seen Murray take a step forward in playmaking. Case in point, his 15 assists against the Mavs. He had, 10 in the first half? I thought was his finest playmaking display that we've ever seen from Murray, probably. He was able to balance all of that playmaking with efficient scoring. He still had 22 points. He had some big shots in the fourth quarter. And I thought in a lot of ways that performance in the Mavericks game was like quintessential Murray, or at least that's what we need to see from Murray. That's what we want to see from him on a consistent basis. Not that he's going to get 15 assists every game, but a guy who can still put up 23, 24, 25 points and be getting other players involved. He has the talent to do that. He just hasn't shown that he can do it consistently. But if he can keep building on what he's been doing over this last four game stretch, we have something special.
Yeah. You know, I think his playmaking isn't just a win for him. It's also a win for Jokic, because where we're at with the modern NBA, it's so much a game about pressure, about release valves and pressure. And suddenly you shift things over to this side of the court and it applies a whole new pressure that the defense has to adapt to. And for Jokic to be able to have this outlet, for instance, one thing that we talk about a lot with this team that they're a great example of is that they're a team that goes for that A shot. We talk about those A shots, B shots, C shots, where it's completely different from old ISO ball, where you just put it in one guy's hands and sure, maybe he takes a C shot, but you just trust him. Almost like Michael Jordan ball, if you want to go back to that example. You go, this is a guy who needs to shoot the ball no matter what level quality of shot it is. Well, when you have these other playmakers next to Jokic, not only are you striving after, of course, those A shots, but now we're starting to talk about striving for quality position, where Jokic can pass off to a competent playmaker who might be in an A position as opposed to him who's sitting in a C position. And that just makes the ability to set up those A shots all the more easier. What you're doing is you're shifting pressure back and forth, back and forth. The Golden State Warriors do this so well between Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and even Durant has immediately played a huge role in their playmaking, not just their scoring. It makes us a legitimate modern team that's not just a one-trick pony. So it's something I've been hoping to see out of him. And like you said, who knows what the consistency will be. He's struggled with that, but he doesn't need to be an 8 assists per game guy.
No.
If he can be a quality 5 assists per game, 6 assists per game, that makes him one of the release valves for Jokic. And then if we can get another guy to step up, whether that's a small forward, or personally, I'm really excited about what Vanderbilt can bring. There's a lot of talk about how hidden his playmaking was at Kentucky, because that just didn't fit their system. If he's a guy who can bring in 5 or 6 assists a game, all of a sudden you've got 2 different outlets. I'm excited.
Dude, just look at this team. I mean, Jared Vanderbilt is somebody like I've totally even forgotten about at this point. I mean, he's a second round pick who we haven't seen. We have no timetable on his return. I mean, this is a guy that's really talented, and the draft experts were really high on that pick that the Nuggets made. Guy who has all the potential, and he's sort of irrelevant in the conversation of this team right now. So, I mean, that just shows you the level of depth that they have. We don't even need to talk about Michael Porter Jr. We haven't really had to even consider him for the last, month or whatever as being anything relevant to the team, and he may not play this year, so he may not be relevant to this team this year. But I mean, this is a guy that could be a total game changer for them if he's healthy. So keep going back to the kind of big picture and the wide-eyed optimism, but I mean, they're in a really good spot in a lot of ways right now.
So another winner that I've got for you is actually, I'm just going to sum it all up. The entire bench.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'm going to leave Morris for you because I bet you have 1 or 2 things to say about him.
I love Monte. But
let me just dance across a few of these others. Wancho, he was a guy who we didn't even know if he'd get a chance this season. It was very likely that his role could have been cut down to trash time minutes. And he all of a sudden has proved to be a lethal shooter from the outside. a guy who could fit in with any system. We have a resurgence in Craig. He definitely fell on hard times. He made our offense clunky when he came in for Barton. But
early in the season, yeah, but
he's been shooting lately. He's been doing a good job of it.
Yeah.
And his defense is just as good. The two games, it's funny to me. We gave him a game ball in that first game against Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even show him, partly because there weren't any good pictures of him. I don't think the media knew to take pictures of him. But we took a picture, or we put a picture of Westbrook complaining, a close up of that, because Beautiful. He shut him down. Because he completely shut him down. And guess what? He did it again in this last game.
Yep.
So, Craig.
Yeah, to Beasley, the point that we had a little Westbrook temper tantrum that he threw at the end of the game. And you know Beautiful. That was largely related to the fact that he wasn't performing in these two games against the Nuggets. He knew that. He knew coming into that game that he had had a bad first game against the Nuggets, and he wanted mm-hmm. to have a better second game. He didn't. And and that boiled over in the end.
Yeah. So, the whole way through, again, I was saying Beasley, he's a guy who's made the most of his opportunity. He's at least showed that he can come in for 10 minutes and be a positive.
I really like Beasley's game.
And not screw things up. Right. I still don't know if that guy, even in our system, could pull off a strong 30-minute performance. But he showed that if you need somebody who can score, who can keep things going, somebody who's fresh, maybe we're in a rut, you can bring him in, and he's a guy who has no memory of where they've been. Mm-hmm. He can just go in and be an immediate impact. He can make the most of his minutes. Plumlee, I could talk all day about Plumlee.
He's been phenomenal.
He's just been unlocked this season. Him and Monte have teamed up so well. Just absolutely phenomenal. One of the best defensive players in the entire league, statistically and performance-wise. So
I need to apologize to Tim Connelly publicly, by the way, for making that trade with Nurkic, because at the time I think you, me and Ladd were all really against it, if I remember right, or at least we thought they gave up, that there was no need to give up a pick in addition to Plumlee,
right? Or that's what killed Nurkic. That's what killed me was the pick.
And I don't know, now looking back at it, he's such a good fit for this team. He's the right bench center, the right backup for Jokic. I mean, now that he's starting too with the injury, he's fit in seamlessly.
Right.
And I think, you know, I don't know about the money they spent on his contract, or you know what the second round pick may or may not have amounted to, but he's just great on this team right now. And so I think that move has really worked out.
While you're apologizing, I can stack on another. I was definitely critical of the contract that they gave him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of different odd angles you could take on that. And none of them, I think, had anything to do with his performance in his first season or half season with us. And he's earning that exactly. We were talking about playoffs. We don't know what this team is in the playoffs. We can guess, but one thing is they like to talk about like that magic number 8. You need to go in with 8 solid players.
Mm-hmm.
And Plumlee has completely proven that he is easily that 6th or 7th extremely reliable player. He's a guy who can play 12 minutes or 22 minutes depending on the situation and make every one of those minutes meaningful in a playoff series, I believe. So I'm excited to see this team go in with that 8 that they have. But that also leads to the other 6th or 7th. Who do you think that would be?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be Monte Morris. And I mean, Monte Morris has been one of the surprises in the NBA this year, not just for the Nuggets.
Right.
I'm seeing love for Monte Morris from random, you know, NBA fans on Twitter, national media people and stuff. Yeah, you know, people that wouldn't normally know a 7th or 8th player on the bench for a team like the Nuggets that's not in a big market.
Yeah, I think his price tag already has to be over 10 million even just a few months into the season when he gets re-signed, which probably won't be with the Nuggets. He's already earned a fat contract. Well, I would love him. I would, But he's going to cost a lot of money. He's looking. So
he's still leading the league in assist to turnover ratio.
Oh, yeah. He won his whole career.
Yeah. He did in college. All 4 years he was in college, he led, I think the nation in assist to turnover ratio.
Yeah. He's going to be that guy.
I mean, every time I look at his numbers, I'm more and more impressed. We were talking about this last week, and, you know, before some of Murray's fourth quarter heroics over the last week. I'm really high on Morris because he's a true point guard, and I really like his playmaking ability alongside Jokic. What we've been able to see, and part of the silver lining of this rash of injuries, has been that we've been able to see Morris playing with Jokic and Murray. Mm-hmm. And that lineup in these fourth quarters of the last three games has been great.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much playmaking ability there with these three guys. And seeing it all mesh together has been really working. And I'm just curious now, and this actually, you know, this might dovetail into our first loser, who might be Isaiah Thomas, because where do you put him now when he comes back? Let's say he's back in January. Because I think what our notion is from just what we gather, not any official reporting, but our notion is that he's still a little ways away. There hasn't been any talk of him returning anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Morris is playing super solid. I mean, you can argue that Morris's numbers per 36 minutes are better than Murray's. there's other intangibles and other things that have to be looked at. So I'm not saying that he's better than Murray, but he's been unbelievable. He's been everything you could possibly want from your backup point guard.
Yeah.
So now we have Isaiah Thomas coming in, you know, a former league leading scorer and a guy that's been injured the last couple of seasons. We don't really know what we're going to get from him. How does he fit into this rotation? You know, he may be kind of an odd man out here.
So I find it hard to believe that IT has lost his chance. I think good players get minutes. And now Morris has proved he's a good player. Murray is a good player. They're not going to, I don't want to say they're going to completely lose out. All of these guys are going to get minutes because they're good players. But what I think he has lost is his safety net. He's a guy who I could see, let's say he comes in 3 weeks with plenty of season left to play. We're not even halfway through at that point. Or maybe about approaching halfway. If he plays, let's say 15 minutes a game for 10 games and he's not playing well, I think it is possible that he loses his rotation spot. Whereas a guy who's garnered that much reputation and history, were we in a different situation where our backup point guard wasn't one of the best point guards in the NBA, he would be a guy who would get a chance, I think, over and over to come in and do something. So I think it's going to come down to what IT do we get when we get him back. I don't think we're going to be seeing 100% of the minutes still going to Murray and to Morris. And just going back with Malone's history and what IT already means to this team right now as a vocal leader. And this is a guy who, Jokic, as good as he is, there's still an argument that prime IT is still would be the most important player on our team right now on our roster if he were prime IT. So it's going to matter what percentage we get back of him, I think.
Let's say we get him back in January, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
We'll also be getting back Harris and Millsap.
Yeah.
Yep. And Barton will be back.
Yeah.
At that point, you can only play five players on the court at a time.
No.
Right?
No, he's small. You sneak him in.
Five and a half players. Corner. We can sneak one in. Yeah. I mean, seriously though, like, how do you fit in minutes? Like I mean, for one thing, Lyles is an odd man out here, right? I think moving forward.
I completely agree with you on that.
And he's been disappointing this year. He's had moments. Yeah, I think he still has potential. I'm not totally like.
He had a good game down against Dallas.
On Lyles. He did have a good game. Yeah, he had 16 points. And that game hits big threes. But, I mean, we're looking at a rotation. If you talked about, you know, when you go into the playoffs, having your eight solid players. Well, we have our starting five of Millsap, Jokic, Murray, Harris, Barton. That leaves three guys between Plumlee, Morris, Wancho, Beasley, Craig, Lyles.
Not necessarily. An eight-man lineup is a pretty tight rotation.
You're not going to go past nine, probably.
We've seen him go 10.
Second unit.
We've seen him go 10. And I think that's exactly what you're looking at is you just have to find him minutes. Even if it's just 10 minutes here or there in some sort of weird odd-man lineup where he's the shooting guard instead of the point guard, you find it and you make it happen because he's that good of a player. And you just find different ways to work. If there's anything we've learned about Malone, it's that he loves to experiment. Man, we had the two towers with Nurkic. We had running the offense through Millsap. We have so much data on so many different lineups over the past three seasons. This is a guy who's not afraid to change things up at a moment's notice. So, he'll find.
Well, to me, the question is. Is it better to have that much depth and to go in the playoffs running, you know, two full units is what we're talking about here, right? We have a full starting unit and a full second unit, 10 players. Or is it time to consider packaging a couple of guys together so that you can get your best seven or eight players together? And I'm not sure the answer to that. I haven't really... I'm just throwing it out there as something that, as the Nuggets move forward, is something to consider because I don't know that we've seen a team in the playoffs run with two full units splitting minutes the way that we're talking about before. I have to think about it. There's probably been somebody, but I mean, for the most part, it's get the best, you know, five, six, seven players you can on a team for the playoffs.
Yeah. So I think assessment plays a huge role here. And to go back to the silver lining idea, the silver lining is when you unintentionally, this is a loose definition of it, but when you unintentionally uncover talent, let's say, let's be specific, basketball talent. Now, when all these guys come back, IT included, it's not going to be any sort of unintentional assessment of talent. I think we're going to have to go mining. And we're talking about the regular season. We're not talking about the playoffs. So you intentionally force lineups, maybe when they're not even necessary. You know that Morris and Murray take care of things as point guards, but you put in IT anyway. Instead of putting Morris in after spelling Murray with Morris, you spell him with IT just because you're not unintentionally happening upon a silver lining of whether IT could fit or not. You're forcing the issue so that you know come playoffs when you do need to tighten the rotations, you know what rotations work best. And it's scary in the West. It's a scary thing, but I think we're going to see it because you can't afford to be dripping losses out of the corner.
Gross.
It is gross. Anyway, all right, give me some more losers.
Yeah, here's another loser is the haters in the national media, specifically Jokic doubters.
Yeah.
They look like fools.
Yeah.
At this point. Slam Magazine had Jokic ranked 24th coming into the season. I think they've pretty well been debunked
on
that ranking.
God, we need to do something. We need to write them or we need to do something.
I don't know.
24th.
It was bad in the preseason, but it looks like an absolute joke at this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mentioned Stephen A. Smith earlier.
Windhorst
was down on them. There's been a number of teams that are going back to what I was saying before about the Jokic bag of milk, like cliche or something. There's some people who just, you see this in baseball with the way that, you know, scouts used to look at things, like before the Moneyball era, where it was like a player needed to look like a good player, you know, like scouts would talk in terms of like, yeah, he's like built like a good player, or he,
yeah,
you know, he has a pretty swing, or those kinds
like
of things.
Like Bryce before, Harper and Trout. Right. Those are
Mike
just
Trout,
baseball,
yeah,
players.
Right, guys like that, which Mike Trout is a great player. But yeah, there was this idea that like there's like an eye test that needs to be passed. And a lot of times that eye test is based on athleticism, size, speed, you know, things that blow us away when we see it. And Jokic doesn't have those things. And so I think for people that aren't watching closely, they're not appreciating the level of skill he has. And that's something that I think we're seeing change in basketball, is a greater emphasis on skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm oddly okay with it. And maybe it's because I just didn't get enough. I didn't personalize things enough to have skin in the game. But, you know, I understand that there's a ridiculous wall that has to be climbed, one that shouldn't be there in the first place, to get big media jumping on the bandwagon, getting on board with the level of respect that Jokic demands, or the Nuggets for that matter. You know, it's still, in the end, it's still a society of presumptuous humans. It's still a boys' club. It's still a fraternity or sorority, or you know, whatever you want to call it, where pure objective value is not the whole picture. So I kind of knew there was just going to be a ridiculous wall that we'd have to get up, but we're actually, it looks like we're kind of there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's gonna
be
a shaky
couple
of
months. Is you win,
right? Exactly. Right? Let's get to the playoffs. Let's win.
We don't need
I'm
respect.
Okay with proving
we just
it.
Need to win, and then right. You'll get the respect.
Right.
One other quick loser. The other Western Conference playoff contenders have been a loser over this stretch.
Yeah.
Because they should have made up ground on the Nuggets. This level of injury.
Oh, you're right. I didn't think about that. This was their time. Oh, man. Yeah, OKC would have been, I think, tied for first had they won that game. And then they quickly slid to third. And I think I don't actually know where they're at now. But
yeah, and you have teams coming now, like the Rockets are starting to climb. I think we all expect Utah will make a climb at some point.
Yeah, and they are looking better. They are looking better.
So some of these teams that have been surprises this year, like the Clippers, the Mavericks, the Kings, I think we expect those teams to fade. I think they're going to be competitive all year, but probably not in the playoff picture. The Clippers maybe will still be in the playoff picture as a low seed by the end of the year. But they're going to be replaced by some of these teams that have been underperforming. Yeah, the Nuggets are. I mean, they've held their own in a stretch that they really should have been conceding ground.
And now, for some reason, a basketball haiku by Nicholas Herzog.
Barton and IT, Harris, Millsap plus two more, Jokic in? Yeah, we're fine. All right, Jeremy, let's play a little fill in the blank. Blank is most responsible for the undefeated homestand.
Jokic. To me, that's a clear one. He, we were talking earlier about how he's been able to shirk these opinions of him not being able to carry a team. But he just proved it. We run the game ball, and every single night it's been him, really. There's other guys who step up who deserve credit, but every single time it's him who carries it.
He's been solid from start to finish too. Like there were a couple of games where Murray had some big plays in the fourth, but he had weaker games through the first three quarters. But Jokic has just been solid all the way through. every game pretty much through this stretch. I went a little bit of a different route, though. I'm saying the defense is the most responsible. And that's really a team game ball that I'll give out, because they don't have their best defensive player right now, who's Paul Millsap. They don't have probably their second best defensive player, Gary Harris, on the team. So they're doing it just through team effort, and they're still playing championship level defense. They're still second against the three on defense, for example. So the fact that they've been able to hunker down, come together as a group through this stretch, and play really solid team defense, even though their best individual defenders have been out, has been key to this stretch of winning.
That's hard to argue with. And that actually brings up another thing, is I was worried going into the stretch that Jokic might give up on defense. Mm-hmm. That by taking on the burden of offense and by not having the good habits of Millsap next to him, that he might slip back into what we've seen in the past. And as much as Jokic deserves it just for taking on the offensive responsibilities, the fact that he has maintained the defense, and maybe by him maintaining the defense, he's kept the pace going for everybody else. If Jokic
I'm going to do it. He might be playing the best defense of his career over the last 4 or 5 games, I think.
Interesting. The plot thickens.
Mm-hmm.
Next fill in the blank. Jokic's play since Millsap went down, funny how we were just talking about that, has been blank.
It's been MVP caliber. What we've seen the last 6 games is an MVP candidate, if you do that for an entire season.
You're right.
He's averaging 25 points a game, 13, 14 boards, 7-8 assists, whatever it is. But it's even more, I mean, the numbers are one thing. It's just the way that he has dominated these games against good teams. Even in the Raptors game, I mean, you could see, you know, Kawhi Leonard, we saw play a great game, and Kawhi Leonard's a great player. He's in the MVP conversation, and he was carrying his team, who was dealing with a bunch of injuries. Jokic was with him play for play, step for step during that game, and was just as instrumental in the Nuggets' success as Kawhi was, and the Nuggets won that game by 9 points.
Yeah.
And to see somebody like Jokic, somebody Greedris we're talking about, not the most athletically gifted player in the NBA, not somebody who was highly drafted, somebody who has been disrespected, who has been questioned, who has been ignored, to be playing on this level is astonishing. And I think it's finally starting to get noticed. It's not a one-off media member who's talking about him being in the MVP conversation. And I think if the Nuggets are in first, second, third place at the end of the season, we're going to see a pretty heavy drumbeat on the Jokic MVP bandwagon.
Yeah, that game is a great example. My social ranting on the night, I'm in charge of the social media, so I speak often. My social ranting for the night was that there was one MVP candidate on the floor, and that was Jokic, because it was a great platform to stand from. Everybody calling Kawhi an MVP candidate this season. It was a great way to exemplify to the entire NBA that Jokic deserves to be in that conversation, if not ahead of Kawhi. And it's this kind of stuff that media needs to hear. You need to put the bug in their ear. You need to say it over and over when he does make a clear display, where it's not just him beating up on, you know, the Kings or something like that, where it's him going toe-to-toe with another MVP candidate. You need to not just sit back and say, that's great. You need to beat that drum, as you said, of look, this is an MVP candidate. And so let me lead that into my answer. Jokic's play since Millsap went down has been redefining. To me, we've taken a player that we know and have hope for, and now even fans who have followed him from his very first game see him in a different light. we've had questions. We have to be honest about this. We have questioned him in so many different ways, as much of as national media has. We've made our little arguments here and there. We built our little battlefield ground. What do they call it? Not blockades. We've fought for our little positions that we can defend in those arguments, but we've never had a solid answer for any of it. And he's redefined the way that we look at him. We now do. So well done.
Yeah. I mean, the other star out of this stretch is Murray. Next fill in the blank. Murray is the blank of this team.
Murray is the ceiling of this team.
Interesting.
It's something I've talked about before. I'm going to go ahead and throw MPJ out. To me, we can't factor him in. It's like the question of, well, what if there's other universes? How does that affect our universe? I'm sorry. I'm not willing to answer that question.
In an alternate reality, MPJ's back is fine.
Right. He's as far as I'm concerned, he's not on our team. He doesn't factor in to our present or our future. So I'm going to go ahead and say Murray is our potential, because as much as Jokic is critical for this team and he can still get better, to me, the ceiling on Murray is so much higher. There's so much more room for him to grow. He has a really high ceiling, and if he gets there and he's showing steps we talked about, if he's able to be a reliable either secondary or even third outlet for playmaking, and if his shooting really, that this is a guy who honestly could be shooting 25 points a game.
He should
be. And this is a guy who could be, again, potential is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He's a guy who should be able to pull up almost, you know, from anywhere on the floor and be that threat that the second he crosses half court, you have to have somebody on him at all times, a guy who forces pressure, like I was talking about earlier, no matter what point he's standing on the court. That changes everything for the Nuggets, I think. That makes us really impossible to defend.
Yeah, I'm saying Murray is the alpha on this team. I've embraced it. I think he has the moxie, to borrow a word I used earlier. He has the killer instinct. He has the swagger, the abrasiveness, the arrogance, I think, to be the alpha dog on this team. It's something Jokic just doesn't have. And it's not a knock against him. People have different personalities, you know. It's and not every athlete is some like hyper competitive like alpha dog. They're just not. That doesn't diminish from Jokic's skill sets in any way. But Murray, I think, is developing into a guy who can be the lightning rod for the team, right? I mean, the controversy is always around Murray, isn't it? because he's the alpha. He's the one that spits in people's face, metaphorically. So
would you say that over the past few weeks, that because it's just been Jokic and Murray, that not only have they carved out a good way of playing together, but that their personality roles have been more defined?
Interesting. Maybe so. I mean, well, you know, we talked about this on our last podcast, that I had some skepticism about Murray being the second playmaker behind Jokic. And I've
which is warranted.
loved what I've seen from Morris this year as a playmaker, which has made me question at times whether Murray's the right fit as the starting point guard for this team. Whether Murray's out of place, whether there's some, you know, or maybe there's some three guard lineup that might make sense where we can get Morris in as the point guard with Murray and Harris as the shooting guard, small forward. So, you know, I've still been wrestling around with those questions in my own head about what the right role is for these players. But I'm really liking what I'm seeing from Murray as a guy who seems to enjoy
causing some emotional problems to the other team,
ruffling some feathers a little bit. I don't know if he does.
but he does.
He sure finds ways of doing it fairly often, doesn't he? And I'm enjoying that. And I think that's something this team needs. You know, you have Jokic, who doesn't ever want to talk about himself. He never wants to take on any kind of praise whatsoever. He doesn't like being challenged about why he isn't taking more shots or anything of the sort. He always deflects. Murray's a guy who's not, he's not like that. He is more brash. And I think having both of those players together on the same team is a good fit. You know, I think Murray can take some of the heat off of Jokic and allow Jokic to just be the basketball savant that he is.
Yeah. Yeah. I see some roles here being defined where personality wise, where Jokic can be the guy to get mad or to feel an onus to get things done and put the ball down and say, everybody get behind me. I'm taking care of this. Whether it's personal with the other guy or whether it's the refs not calling or whether it's just his need to make something happen in the moment where he gets it done. But Murray is the guy who on the very next play can hit a three and just look at the other team right in the eye or say something or vocalize something. Or
yeah, I mean, other teams don't like having arrows shot at them, right? Like, that's a Murray thing. That's right. Not a Jokic thing.
Yeah, and so mouthpiece, I guess, is what I'm saying. Murray can be more the mouthpiece, even though he gives into Jokic's leadership of getting things done, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and for the record, when I say Murray is the alpha, that is not...
You're talking about personality.
We live in a culture, right? We live in a culture where it seems like that's generally considered to be superior. Like, people want to be the alpha. They think of that as a good thing. Beta is a negative term for somebody, right? And I do not see it that way at all. But I do think you need a player on a team to be somebody who can be a lightning rod a little bit. And I'm glad we're seeing Murray step into that role, even at the young age that he is, because the other personalities on the team, I mean, Paul Millsap is not going to be that guy. And he is an older veteran who maybe if he was a different player on a different mix of players and temperaments, he might need to be that guy, but that's just not him. I'm thinking about Kenyon Martin from the 09 Nuggets squad.
Right.
You know, that guy that just kind of can get under the other team's skin. You know, it's a good, you want that guy on your team. You need him. You want somebody who gets Russell Westbrook to get a technical foul at the end of a game. Like, right. I'm glad we have a player who can get under his skin like that. So,
okay. Last fill in the blank before we wrap it up. Blank is benefiting the most from the current rash of injuries.
I think it's Malik Beasley. Mm-hmm. I think without Harris, Barton, and IT all being injured, Beasley maybe didn't even see the court this year. Or,
yeah,
you know, he'd be getting a couple of minutes every other game or something. Instead, we've seen him as a starter. We've seen him in major with getting major minutes, 25 minutes a game. And we're seeing that he is a quality NBA player. He has a future in the league. And the Nuggets have somebody who they can fill in as a starter, or they can bring him in off the bench as a sixth, seventh man up, and he can contribute valuable shooting, effort, defense, and playmaking. I think he really has shown that he's an NBA player, and that's exciting and something we wouldn't have seen had these injuries not happened.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought about Beasley. It's a good choice, but I wound up going with Wancho. Wancho's proved that he can handle 30 minutes in the NBA game in and game out, and for the most part, be positive, bring a lot to the position. That was one thing. Even in his first season, it took a while before he wanted to take a shot or wanted to do anything with the ball other than pass it. I think the spotlights were pretty big for him coming over and playing in the NBA. But he was a guy who also coming in this season, I did have Wancho slated when you first look at it and you know the minutes are never going to work out, that not everybody's going to be healthy and everything, I still saw Wancho gain about 12 to 15 minutes a game. And I thought that was a little optimistic, but that's where I put him at. With Beasley, yeah, I did have him down like around 5 minutes, you know, 3 minutes.
Right.
But
G League.
But coming into this season, after last season, Wancho was a guy where, honestly, it would have been hard to even just trade him for nothing, where you would have had to find the right manager who would be willing to look back to Wancho's first season, the mm-hmm. end of the first season specifically, where it started looking like Wancho could offer something offensively from the 3-point line. But that you'd have to find the right manager who would be willing to look at Wancho in that way. There's going to be a lot of guys who said, this guy doesn't have any energy. He's slow and lost on defense. All he has is a shot and nothing. And I think he's earned a contract. Before we were talking about Morris, he's definitely earned a fat contract. Wancho, I don't think as much, but I think he's proved that he can fill a role on any NBA roster. So I don't think Beasley has answered that. I think he's answered the questions to the Nuggets that he can play a role. But I think, you know, if I'm another manager and you're offering me purely to base these guys into to base their humanity and turn them into trade value, if you're offering me Beasley, I don't think I'm necessarily interested other than a flyer. But if you're offering me Wancho, I think I'm getting a guy who can fill a slot, fill a role on my team, whether I'm one of the top teams in the NBA or one of the worst.
All right, Jeremy. So 2 weeks from now, we do this again. Are we going to be talking about the Nuggets as a championship contender, or are we going to be dealing with some bumps and bruises from this rash of injuries?
We're heading into an even more positive. The clouds are starting to part. We're going to be slowly getting some guys in the next 2 weeks. I feel like it's almost guaranteed we're going to see Barton back. You know, maybe he'll be the only one we see back in the next 2 weeks, but there's even some rumors of Vanderbilt
really
coming back. I think the idea was to immediately ship him to G League, but that was before we had this rash of injuries. So who knows? There's a chance if he gets slotted into practice and if he feels good that he might actually end up on the NBA court before he does the G League court. But we're entering the next, I'd say, 2 to 6 weeks is going to be where our reinforcements are coming back in. Gary Harris, I didn't even mention him. He should definitely be back in 4 weeks or so. So it's going to be, you brought up before, and I actually kind of argued with you a little bit over it, is the challenge is going to be fitting in these good players. And that's what we have to look forward to. To be more specific, I'm really looking forward to this back-to-back with the Spurs that we have. To me, it's almost like a passing of the guard. We've had them good. There hasn't been a team in the NBA as good as they have been for as long of a time. We're going back to David Robinson.
20 years.
Yeah. And now they really are seeing their twilight. As much credit as I have to give DeMar. What about you?
Yeah. I'm all in on this team at this point. If they lost the next 3 or 4 in a row, I'll shrug it off. Don't care. I'm convinced that this is a solid team. This is a playoff team. At worst, a mid-round playoff a mid-seed playoff team, and that they're going to give somebody a nightmare in the first round for sure, if not win.
Give me your worst-case scenario, a playoff seeding. Worst-case scenario.
Worst case scenario for me is probably 7 seed.
Okay.
Going against somebody like
Houston,
who's climbed to a 2nd seed. I think that's still a possibility now that they're getting going.
Yeah, I feel like I'm keeping them at 3rd right now. I see them coming back. I'm expecting them to get 3rd, I should say.
Yeah, I could totally see a 3-6 matchup or 4-5 matchup against like the Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Lakers or something in the first round, where I wouldn't want to play the Nuggets.
Right. I'm almost I didn't think I'd be more optimistic than you, but I think my worst case scenario, and this is not, we're not talking about Jokic going out for a long time or anything like that. Just the team that we have playing badly or hitting kinks. My worst case scenario, I think, is sixth seed.
Yeah.
It's hard seeing them fall back to where, you know, they're not as good as boy, every team is there.
I don't like having this much confidence. It's making me scared now that we're saying it, because
that goes back to what I was saying.
This is the Denver Nuggets we're talking about here. What are we doing?
If you think you're scared, I think Tim Conley has to be.
Like, I was terrified.
Saying, he's never had a full stack of chips to play with before. Yeah, that's gonna be a scary position. It's my French coming out. Oh, really? Oh gosh, cut that.
Yeah.
but